Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. The week one betting lines are up. Those are the numbers courtesy of our friends at PointsBet. San Francisco at Detroit. That's the biggest spread. The 49ers, 7.5-point favorite against the Lions. And the Rams in the Sunday night game that we will have from SoFi Stadium. The Bears, 7-point underdogs in that game. You know, it's a little bit dicey for some of these. We don't know who's going to be healthy. We don't know who's going to be playing quarterback. But hey, that's why the lines move, Miles. It's kind of neat to see that it's already out there, and if you want to hedge one way or the other, you can put some money down, and then you can wait 4 months to see what the outcome is.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're betting on something that's 4 months away, especially when it's like one game in week one, it's kind of like, well, man, this bet that you placed today may or may not have good value when it comes to September 9th when the season opens, or whatever that day is, I guess September 13th when they play on Sunday. So look, if people like that stuff, go on ahead. I think it's fun, at least for us right now, to be able to discuss.
I'm fascinated by some of the futures bets like MVP and Rookie of the Year. You can already bet on who's going to be the first draft pick next year. But I guess I like my return, my dopamine rush a little more immediate than waiting 4 months for the payoff. I'm not nearly as patient when it comes to that, which is probably one of the reasons why it's wise for me to avoid it all entirely. But that's a different issue altogether. All right. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, this has not yet been posted by PointsBet, but they've informed us that when the lines are out for all 17 games, the Buccaneers will be favored to win each one of them. That happened in 2019. The Patriots were favored before the season to win all 16 of their games. And remember, they were like 8-0, I think, before a Sunday night game against the Ravens, and the Ravens gave them their first loss, and they finished 12-4. But the Buccaneers, with Tom Brady in his second year with the team, will be favored to win all 17 of the games that you see there on the screen.
Yeah, I think that their one against the Rams is probably going to be the closest. And look, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Look, I think by the end of the season, the Buccaneers were clearly the best team in football. And when you return all 22 starters and then a lot of your key guys that are reserves, there's no reason to think that they shouldn't be favored in all 17 of these games. So, I mean, do I think that they're going to be able to go 17-0? No, not necessarily. But I think that it's going to be fun to watch them for most of the year. And can they go 15-2 or 14-3? Yeah, I don't see why that's impossible.
The fact that the Rams game will be the smallest line right now, 1.5 is what is expected to come in at, that's the last game before Tom Brady goes back to New England. And look, I would suspect that he's probably the last person on earth to be distracted by anything. He's the king of focus and compartmentalization and doing what needs to be done now. But he's never experienced going back to Gillette Stadium, the place where he'd been for 20 years, knowing it's looming, knowing it's there. How do you set that aside? How do you focus on a cross-country trip to LA to play the Rams, take care of business there, and then all the way back to Tampa and get ready for that game in New England? That it's unprecedented for him, for anyone in the NFL, to have that marker week four that's there and potentially distracting you. So we'll see what that means when they play the LA Rams. But let's talk about that that week four game. Tom Brady made the point yesterday in response to a graphic showing him back at Gillette Stadium in his Buccaneers uniform. It's like when your high school friends meet your college friends with the, I don't know what that is, emoji. I don't know how to describe it. Is it scared emoji? What is it?
I would call it more of a grimace. Is it, like, ooh, you know?
Fake, cheesy, fake smile emoji? It's, I don't know.
I'm going to date myself with this one. It's like in I Love Lucy, you know, where she's like, ugh. You know, that's kind of how I picture it.
Wait, but you weren't even, was Lucy even alive when you were alive? Is there any overlap?
My mom might not have
been
alive.
How can you even make a Lucy reference?
I know. My mom, I don't think, was alive when that show started coming on the air. So, like, you know, you watch it, you know, they used to show it on Nick at Night, the place for TV hits, you know. Lucy, I love Lucy. Yeah, the one where she's getting the chocolates off the conveyor belt. It's classic stuff, man.
They're playing the old-time music from Miles. He's not even 30 yet. They're playing the old-time music. They haven't played it
in a while. And I don't
want to
see those single-digit numbers either. Get off my lawn.
So, anyway, the game between the Patriots and the Buccaneers, Week 4 Gillette Stadium, it's expected to be a record price on the secondary market. And it's just so funny how it's like a switch flip somewhere. Like my whole life up until, I don't know, 15 years ago, scalping illegal, scalping wrong, scalping improper, scalping, hey, it's cool, man. As long as the NFL can get their cut, it's great. Everybody's scalping now. You do it on a computer, it's fine. You stand outside the stadium, not fine. Do it in your phone. Hey, man, open season. So anyway, so the tickets are expected to go for more than $1,500. Right now, the cheapest seat on Ticketmaster is $1,500. It's just crazy. And I suspect, Miles, it's only going to go up and up as the event gets closer.
Oh, no doubt. Because, look, if you are somebody who rooted for Tom Brady for so many years, saw him win so many trophies, you want to come back and you want to give him his due, I would expect, right? I don't feel like Tom Brady's going to come in there and that people are going to, like, boo Tom Brady. Why would anybody ever do that? He won you literally six trophies. So even though he went to Tampa Bay and he won another, like, they're going to honor Tom Brady probably in a significant way. On the video board, you know, with the pregame, something is going to happen to honor Tom Brady. And I really understand why fans would want to be in the stands for what is probably going to be his last time ever at Foxborough as a player.
What is the most, Miles, that you would pay a ticket to see? And what is it that you would pay that amount for?
That's a really good question. And $2,000 probably. But I would have to be like in a really good seat. I'm not just going to pay $2,000 just to be in the stadium. Like if it's $2,000 and I'm like front and center for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, especially because John Frusciante's back, that would probably be
it. John Frusciante. Well, absolutely. John Frusciante. Who could ever spend less than two dimes to go see John Frusciante? You know, I don't understand it, Miles. You can spend $2,000 to go see a group that was popular in the 80s, man, and you're still eating at breakfast buffets? Something doesn't add up here.
I don't know. I think, and I'm making I Love Lucy references. I think I just aged myself like 15 to 20 years of the course of this show. But you know, if you're saying it like that,
good.
You don't understand how good that man is at guitar, all right? It's a big deal that he's back. It's a big, big deal.
I'd never even heard of him. I know it's of Anthony Kiedis. Is that his last name?
And Anthony Flea. Anthony Kiedis, yes. And Flea. Chad Smith on the drums.
Yeah. Beyond that, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
All right. I don't know. I don't know what I would. I don't know how much I'd pay for something. I'm extremely cheap. It would have to be something really, really great. Something really awesome.
The final Kiss concert ever. What would you pay?
No, I don't care. I don't care. That ship has sailed. I was there 2 years ago. I mean, they should. No,
really?
No. It's time for walkers and crutches. It's not what it was.
Doesn't matter.
It matters. Trust me. I saw them when they could actually move around on those boots. It's not good anymore. It really isn't. They distract you with lights and images and bombs. And, the older they get, the more fire they incorporate into their act because it's a distraction from the fact that, it's just not. Spandex is not kind to the body of a man in his 70s. That's for sure. So I don't know. I've never seen Springsteen. And I've become a Springsteen guy. I know that all middle-aged reporters are, Springsteen guys their entire lives.
I was going to say, you are a white sports writer.
I did just discover him within the past couple of years. We went to see him on Broadway when he was doing the one-man show, which was awesome. And I've been listening to a lot of Springsteen the past 2 or 3 years. So I'd want to see one of his legendary 3-hour E Street Band conferences. Or concerts, not conferences. Slight difference between the two words. First three letters are the same, though. But that's what I would probably pay a lot to be close enough to see his 70-year-old body, not in spandex. He'll stick with, blue jeans and a jean jacket or something.
That'd probably be a good concert. If we're talking about, older people, I would say Elton John. I would spend a lot of money to go see Elton John. Probably, Billy Joel, probably another one of those guys that I just want to see. I did see the Rolling Stones a few years ago, and I was supposed to see them last year before the pandemic. But that would be another one where I would spend some good money probably just because, you want to be able to see those people before they kick the bucket.
Week 9 of the regular season, and I assume that there will be some demand for this ticket in Carolina. Cam Newton is back. The Patriots at the Panthers. Cam's homecoming. That's a sneaky great game. That's the same day that the Chiefs and Packers play with Broncos Cowboys as the fallback in the event that Aaron Rodgers ends up in Denver. But let's not give short shrift to Cam Newton as a Patriot returning to Carolina. The only question is whether or not he'll be the quarterback. Could it be the quarterback that they could have had with the 8th overall pick, Mac Jones? I'm not ready to say it's guaranteed that Cam Newton's even going to play that day.
That was going to be my question when you first brought it up. It could be Cam Newton's revenge game, or it could be Cam Newton on the sidelines rooting for Mac Jones to do everything he possibly can to beat the Carolina Panthers in Charlotte. So I don't know about that one. I think it's hard to say when Mac Jones is going to be ready, especially considering who his head coach is. That's just one where it's not like, people are going to be able to badger Bill Belichick into being like, yeah, I'm playing Mac Jones. It's just going to happen when it's going to happen, and Bill Belichick is going to be like, oh, well, he's just practicing better now. And everybody's going to be like, okay, but why? And he's going to be like, you practice better. And so I don't know. I don't know when Mac Jones is going to play, but that's how it's going to turn out.
The Panther season gets started with a visit from the New York Jets. Zach Wilson undoubtedly will be the starting quarterback. He said last weekend he needs to earn it. Look at the depth chart, Zach. You've already earned
you
it.
Did,
you walk
bro.
Through the door and you earn it. The other two guys, James Morgan and Mike White, are you kidding me? All due respect to
Who?
Both of those men. I assume that they're fine individuals,
Sorry.
But right. Yeah. Zach Wilson will be the starter. Here's Michael Carter, a guy regarded as one of the steals of the draft, a fourth-round running back who fell to the Jets. Here he is on SiriusXM NFL Radio talking about his new quarterback in New York.
I love Zach. We locked in already. That's my boy. And it's crazy. He's a great player. He's literally so good. And he's so smart. And he does minute stuff that just really wows you. And so he deserved to be the number one pick, if I'm being honest.
Well, and hey, Chris Sims had Zach Wilson above Trevor Lawrence in his rankings. And there is some of that quality that we see from a Patrick Mahomes and an Aaron Rodgers, the flick of the wrist, 50-yard throw. And, we saw other quarterbacks try to emulate that in their pro day workouts. They got to put their whole arm into it. Wilson's got it. He's got that, whatever it is, he's got the ability. He's got that Mahomes ability to deliver the ball accurately with velocity and with a distance without that, traditional crank your arm back like a catapult and let it fly. And that's going to serve him well. We'll see what that translates into. But it's going to be exciting to see what Wilson can do for the Jets. And, you know, for Jets fans, it's been a long 50 years since Joe Namath. Sooner or later, you're going to stumble into a guy who's going to be a pretty good quarterback. The odds suggest that it's time for the Jets to finally get theirs.
Listen, if the Browns can find one, then probably the Jets can find one, too. I do like, though, you know, when you get a guy who's in the same draft class, he's a running back, and he's just going on the radio, he's just gassing him up, man. You gas up your QB like that, that's fun. I really like that. He's literally so good. Like, you don't know how good he is. You've never played with him before. You've barely been on the same field with him for 5 minutes. But, like, if that's the kind of connection they already have, and you're just saying, you know what, I'm gassing up my QB, I love that. I love that. Support your teammate.
Are you saying that nothing can be gleaned from a three-day rookie minicamp?
Yes, with no contact? Exactly what I'm saying. Yes.
And the quarterback in a red jersey where he's not in danger of being hit by anyone? How about the Colts? Yeah. They haven't won a season opener since 2013. Think about that.
That means they
went 1-0 in the Andrew Luck debut in 2012. Since then, loss, week one. You know, it even though the first week means nothing, there is just a little bit of a psychological blow that you take when you've had this build-up for the first week and you lose the game. And they've been a pretty good team for the most part. You know, they overcome those losses. But, yeah, look at that. Dating back, so 2013 is the last year they went 1-0. Sorry, 2013 is the last year, not 2012. So, still, that is 7 straight years of starting off 0-1. And this year, they could end up 0-1 again. They got the Seahawks coming to town, Miles.
Well, yeah, they do. And look, I mean, I was there for that 2017 game with the Rams at the LA Coliseum. And they had Scott Tolzien starting, and he was so awful that they had to put in Jacoby Brissett in the second half. And he'd just been there for a few days at that point after getting traded to the Colts from the Patriots. So it's an interesting thing. Look, if they start 0-1 this season, like, I don't think anybody's going to be apoplectic unless Carson Wentz goes out there and he throws 3 picks and he takes like 5 sacks and he doesn't look any better than he did last year, last time we saw him with the Philadelphia Eagles. And he's also 0-5 in his career against the Seahawks and Russell Wilson, although one of those was a playoff game and he only played a couple of series in there. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Colts this year, but I certainly think that they could start 0-1.
I'm going to go off the board for the next one because it reminds me of what Art Rooney, the Steelers president, said the other night. They haven't had a home game in week one in 7 years. And this year, again, on the road at Buffalo. I mean, you knew since the last season ended who you were going to play and where you were going to have to go. So at some point, we got to go to Buffalo. But do you really want to go to Buffalo right out of the gates? Do you really want to be the team that is served up to the Bills Mafia after they have a full year of pent-up table-jumping frustration of not being able to see their team play after everything they became last year? Do you want to be the Christians that get fed to those lions week one? I would say no, if I'm the Steelers or any other team. The Steelers drew the short straw, and it really is amazing. 7 straight years now for one of the presumably favored franchises in the NFL on the road to start the season.
Well, not only that, but they're in the 1 o'clock window, man. Like, that's a really good game to just be tucked away in the 1 o'clock window week one. So, that's a game that I'm going to want to watch for sure. And I think it's funny, though, you know, you talk about like the Bills Mafia, and they've got pent up table frustration, right? Like, imagine how many tables are going to be bought in Western New York over the course of that week just to be broken on Sunday? Whoever's in the table business, yeah, or whoever's not in the table business, I guess I should say, you might want to get those tables, you know, go to Costco, buy a few, and just have them set up somewhere so that people can buy them, because they will buy them and then they will get broken.
And it's important to remember, it's not just the return to the stadium and everything is moving toward full capacity. I thought earlier this week there could be some states where there's reduced capacity. I think it's going to be open season. Everyone knows the risks. Everyone's had the opportunity to be vaccinated. Hopefully more people will continue to do so. But it's the tailgating experience. And in Buffalo, it is unique to say the least. And that will be happening in full bloom before the game. So, yeah, I think the Steelers would probably have preferred any other game on their schedule of all the 17, I mean, really, the last one I would have wanted right out of the gates would be to go to Buffalo. So maybe maybe next year. That's something to remember next year when the schedule comes out. Do they get their home game? I'm not worried about middle of December in Buffalo if I'm the Steelers, though. I'm not worried about the weather. Maybe the weather takes a little bit of the steam out of Bills Mafia.
Maybe. I don't mean, like, who's going to be upset when it's, you know, still 65 to 80 degrees, you know, in Western New York in September? I don't know. But, I mean, look, the Steelers' run game has not been very good over the last couple of years, and I know they drafted Najee Harris, but, like, they still got something to prove there when it comes to running the football. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe September is better because, you know, you get Ben and he's still going to be able to throw the ball, and he's going to be able to throw the ball because his arm is still going to be fine as opposed to, you know, having all the reps in December. So that's maybe
that's another good point, though. That's another good point. Get a marquee game on the schedule week one because we don't know how long Ben Roethlisberger is going to hold up. And I think that that's a real concern that the Steelers have found a way to gloss over as they've worked themselves into this notion that they can put it all together this year and right the wrongs of last year and somehow get to the Super Bowl. Washington got to the playoffs last year. They won the division. They have 5 straight division games to end the season. Week 2, they play the Giants, and then no more games against teams from the NFC East until week 14. And there it is, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. What a strange way to end your season. But, you know, Miles, it very well could be that the schedule makers look at it and say, hey, we don't know what's going to happen in the NFC East, and it may be none of the above again. And maybe it makes for an interesting stretch run if the team that won the division last year is running the easier gauntlet of its division to end the season.
Well, no, I mean, they basically are in the playoff hunt throughout the season, right? I mean, if they get to that stretch and they're around 500, then they should, in theory, be able to catch somebody in the division if all you do is play divisional games through, you know, the last 5 games of the season. I mean, I don't know how much I love it if I'm Washington that I don't play any familiar opponents for so long in the season. But at the same time, like, that's really, I don't want to say controlling your destiny, but, you know, whatever it is, you know, you get to really have a real good sense of control over whether or not you make the postseason when you have that many division contests, I feel like, in the back half of the year.
Leave that, pull that back up if you can, because the NFC East was bad last year. This year, every team in the NFC East plays every team in the AFC West and every team in the NFC South. That does not bode well for one of these 4 teams going 12-4. And Washington, which I continue to believe is the best team in the division, because they won it last year, they get the Packers. They get the Seahawks. The other teams in the division don't get the Packers or the Seahawks. Now, you know, they're going to have to play other teams in the NFC West, which are pretty good, but they don't get the best teams. The first place team plays those best teams in the other 2 divisions where they don't play every team. It could be another 7-9, maybe even a 6-10 champion in the NFC East this year, Miles, because just the schedule doesn't fit well for those 4 teams. They're going to have some tough games.
Well, the schedule also doesn't fit what you just said. I believe it would be 8-9.
Oh, that's right.
7-10 or 6-11. Come on, Mike. You know,
I can't get used to it.
Well, you better. You know, we got to be flexible. We got to be docile. You know, we got to react to all the different things that are happening here, man. It's the new age. They got linebackers are going to be wearing number 11. You know, it's the way things are now.
One thing I've been trying to remind myself of when I talk about this new season, it is the first time there's ever been 17 games. It's not the first time there's ever been 18 weeks. There was an 18-week season back when you were in diapers, 1993. I assume you were still in diapers. What were you, 4 then?
No,
you were 2.
It's like 2.
When was your birthday, and when did you turn 2 in October?
When? I turned 2 in October.
What day?
There's another hint for you.
September?
My birthday's
okay.
Not in October.
It's September. Oh, it's September. So anyway, there was an 18-week season then because there were 2 byes. And so this is the second time there's an 18-week season, but 17 games. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, let's hear some of what Brett Veach, the Chiefs general manager, had to say earlier this week. We also have a draft coming up, and we'll be back with more PFT Live right after this.
summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dramatic changes on the offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs, and for good reason. They need to protect Patrick Mahomes better. I discussed that topic and various others earlier this week with the man who discovered Patrick Mahomes 4 years ago, Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach. Here is some of our conversation. We're coming up on 2 weeks since the 2021 draft. For the first night, you had no first-round pick. That pick was traded to the Ravens for tackle Orlando Brown. What do you do during the first round of a draft, that four-hour marathon, and you don't have a pick? How do you keep yourself occupied?
Well, yeah, so the first 10 or 15 picks are rather boring because, you know, you don't have a pick and, you know, there's no moves to be made. Once you get into the teens and 20, though, you start kind of doing, you know, your number game. So every team has basically a percentage of players that they need to be available to have a chance at a certain player. So once we get into the 20s, we're really starting to recalculate our second round board and to see if we get the numbers that we need to have specific players that we like in that zone for tomorrow. And then so it starts off rather boring, but once you get into the 20s, you know, you start doing the calculations in your mind and you get with your staff. And then as soon as the last pick is in for the day, and then it's a complete dismantling of the board and you're just restacking the board as if the Friday was the first day of the draft. So it starts off slow, but like everything else in this league, it picks up the intensity pretty quick. And then you're on to Friday and you know, you're excited to, for us and for our situation, to add two new players.
I'm not looking for names, but was there any talk, any possibility, any discussions about possibly finding a way into the bottom of round one for the Chiefs?
No, not at all. Simply because we exhausted those possibilities during, you know, the off season, and as we looked at options and what we could do, we went through that process. And then when Orlando Brown became available, you know, we decided to go in that direction. You know, certainly we wanted to address the offensive line in the off season, and we were able to add a quality interior player in Joe Tooney. And we still were looking for some tackle help, and in particular wanted to solidify that left tackle position. Certainly went through those exercises in the weeks leading up to the draft and what it would cost to move up and what would be most advantageous for us both in the short and long term. But then when the Orlando Brown trade became available, that was the direction we decided to go. And once we made that move, we were certainly content on you know, working in volume and just trying to focus on maximizing our picks throughout the rest of the draft.
The Ravens are one of the Chiefs' top conference rivals. Quarterback Lamar Jackson has called the Chiefs the Ravens' kryptonite. When an opportunity arises to trade for one of the Ravens' starting offensive linemen, do you stop and think, where's the catch here? Why are they willing to send one of their best offensive linemen to a team that they are trying so desperately to get past in the postseason?
I mean, I don't know if I necessarily do. I mean, look, that's a great organization, and Eric does a great job there. And you know, Ozzie before him, they are always winning games and winning conference championships and division championships and what have you. So, you know, I think it's more of a situation by situation. I mean, look, I think it was made early on that Orlando would like to play left tackle, and you certainly knew of his family history there at Baltimore. And he also knew that they respected him. And then I really get the sense it was, they wanted what was best for him and the organization. It was a unique scenario. And then Mike, you know, you have the Suter angle. I mean, left tackle. I mean, there's a bunch of teams that have left tackles. There's a bunch of teams that have high picks that want to allocate those high picks in left tackle. So I think we were just in a really good position in regards to a specific need and a fit, and they had a player that they wanted to help out. But again, I think you have to marry, you know, what that player is looking for with the team and their specific needs. Again, you'll have X amount of teams that already have starting left tackles. Well, he wanted to play left tackle. And then you'll have some teams that could use a left tackle, but they may be picking the top 10, top 15. So then I think it kind of narrows your suitors. So I think we just lucked out with, we just had that specific need, and they had a specific player that was looking for that position.
And I've heard plenty of general managers, coaches, and owners say in recent years that when you give up that first-round pick for a player, that player becomes your de facto first-round pick. The difference, though, obviously, is contractual. And we've seen this trend in recent years, whether it's Laremy Tunsil, whether it's Jalen Ramsey, Jamal Adams. Guys get traded for one or more first-round picks without a new contract on the way in. Did you try to work out a new deal with Orlando Brown as part of the trade, or were you happy to say, we'll take this guy and we'll worry about the contract later?
Well, once Baltimore allowed us to talk to Orlando and his agent, and they, you know, granted us that permission, you know, we had lengthy conversations. And, you know, one of the things we talked about was still the unknown cap moving forward. And certainly, you know, we all believe that a healthier cap is on the horizon. And we still have some things that, you know, we wanted to do, and we just came to understanding that, you know, we're certainly going to be committed to making this work long term, but both parties would be happy to let it play out and then, you know, work off a structure next season when we have a little bit more clarification of, you know, what the cap will be in 22 and where we'll be moving forward. I think we'll have a lot more information. I think we'll all be able to do something that, you know, helps both sides.
By the way, if you notice that sketch over Brett's right shoulder, that's actually of the original Lombardi Trophy, which had both the logos of the AFL and the NFL on the front. And when you think about how iconic that trophy is, they nailed it right out of the gates, Miles, from the very first Super Bowl, which wasn't even called the Super Bowl. Chiefs-Packers World Championship, AFL-NFL. They nailed the trophy. They nailed it. I mean, that trophy is the trophy, all due respect to the Stanley Cup. That is the iconic sports trophy, and they got it right from the very first time they played that game.
I totally agree with you. I love the trophy. I love everything about it. I love the trophy presentation, too, and the song that they play when the trophy is being walked up to the stage, because it's the only time you ever hear it, like, all year. I love it. So maybe it's just because I'm biased because I love football, but, you know, I mean, they can keep the Stanley Cup over in hockey. I'm fine with that. Like, the Lombardi Trophy is absolutely a perfect trophy. I totally agree with you.
And the Chiefs were the team that won the last Lombardi Trophy that had both of the logos on it because it was the last Super Bowl play. They beat the Vikings 23-7. I didn't watch that game. I was four. Thankfully, that's one of the four Super Bowl losses by the Vikings I didn't have to endure. The only one I didn't have to endure, but that was the last one that had both logos on it, because after that, it was the AFL and the NFL becoming the NFL. The Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl the last 2 years. Look, I have no issue with what they've done to try to make their offensive line better. They had to do something. They spent a lot of money on Joe Tooney. They've traded for Orlando Brown. That's their first round pick this year, although they're going to have to pay him at some point. They also need to consider maybe, you know, keeping a tight end to block or having a running back who isn't running pass routes. You got to do more than just expect that Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to run around all day and eventually find someone open, Miles.
Okay, yes. But I also got to say, man, I like that they're not just resting on the fact that Patrick Mahomes is going to keep them employed, right? Like, it's about going out there and trying to win championships. And when you look at everything that is going to be different across that offensive line, except for basically right tackle from the 2020 season, I mean, Remmers had to go over and play left tackle because Eric Fisher got hurt in the AFC Championship game, so he had to do that for the Super Bowl. But I just feel like, when you don't rest on the fact that Patrick Mahomes is going to keep you employed, when you go out and you make all these different moves to basically say, yes, we know we need to do something, I think you deserve a lot of respect for that, because there is a quarterback who's not very happy with his team right now in Green Bay, where I don't think we can definitively say that each year they have gone out and you can say, like, yes, they've done the thing that will clearly make them better. I mean, look at what Patrick Mahomes did right there. My God, he should not have to do that in order to try to make the Chiefs competitive. And that's basically what this entire offseason has been about for Kansas City. So I say you give kudos to Brett Veach for not just saying, yeah, I know Patrick Mahomes is going to keep me employed. We can go out and we can do whatever it is that we want to do. No, they have made a concerted effort to use what they have and all the resources that they can to make what was a weakness a strength for them in 2021 and beyond.
I love those two plays. Can you imagine if the first one had actually been completed? It would be regarded as one of the great plays in NFL history, and there's still no guarantee they would have emerged from that deficit to win the game. But that's what you have with Patrick Mahomes, that constant hope. Sims and I were talking about this yesterday. Even when you're supposedly getting blown out, when you have Mahomes, you always have a chance that he's going to find that gas pedal, he's going to make some big play, and it's going to lift the team, just like the Jet Chip Wasp play when they were down 10 points with 7 minutes left in Super Bowl 54, how that turned things around. It really is amazing. But you're right. They're not going to rest on their laurels, and they can't afford to, because he ran around so much last year, he messed up his toe against your Cleveland Browns, and then that had to have affected him in some way in Super Bowl 55, and he had the surgery 3 days later. By the way, the Chiefs also have worked out a trade with the Vikings for Mike Hughes, a first-round pick who was regarded as kind of a mini-steal, a guy who slid for off-field issues to the Vikings several years ago. Vikings got a sixth-round pick and gave back a seventh-round pick for Mike Hughes. So that tells you he was no longer in the Vikings' plans, and now he gets a chance to have a second act in Kansas City. Hey, as second acts go, I mean, you can go to Houston or you can go to Kansas City. I'll take Kansas City. I'll do respect to Houston.
The barbecue is better in Kansas City, too. So, I mean, not just the team, you know. You're getting better food. Jack Stack, Joe's. That's what I'm talking about. Q39. Oh, yeah.
Let's take a quick break. When we return, our draft for today, the dumbest moves of the offseason. We'll do that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Arthur.
There are various things that you should never do. One thing you should never do is put your gasoline in a plastic bag. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission recently advised folks not to put their gasoline in a plastic bag, because very soon the gasoline will eat through the plastic. Even if you double bag it, it's getting through and it's going everywhere. There was a vehicle that ended up on fire recently. I mean, there's no joking about that, as somebody was hoarding gasoline because of the pipeline hack. So in honor of the fact that, and in an effort to get the word out to anyone who may have any uncertainty about this, don't put your gasoline in plastic bags. Today's draft, the dumbest moves of the NFL offseason, assuming that there are no teams out there that put their gasoline in plastic bags. That would be number one. We move on now to other things that were done that maybe shouldn't have been done. Miles, I'll give you the honors. First pick goes to you. Dumbest offseason moves, 2021. You're up.
Okay. I don't want to feel like I'm a hater on this team, but like I feel like there were maybe three or four things that they've done over the course of this offseason that I could use for this segment. But I'll say this. The Raiders signed Kenyon Drake, running back, to a deal for 2 years, $11 million. With $8.5 million guaranteed. Why would you do that in the year of our Lord 2021 for a running back? I just don't understand. And like, I know that they tried this thing with Lynn Bowden last year where they wanted to convert him into like a flex guy where he can play running back and then wide receiver. And they think Kenyon Drake can do that, but are they going to trade him now like a third round pick before he even plays a snap? So that's really the Lynn Bowden role. I think that there are other ways of getting that role done than signing a running back when you already have Josh Jacobs, who's going to be your number one guy for $8.5 million guaranteed.
And that's right. They have Josh Jacobs on a rookie contract who's making a lot less than that, and he's their workhorse. So it makes no sense. You could find somebody for a lot cheaper. You could get lucky and get somebody in round five or six of the draft who can maybe do what Kenyon Drake would do. And dollar for dollar, it's going to be a better value. I have to go with a topic that we discussed earlier in the program. The Panthers trading a sixth-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and a second-round pick. Next year, a second-round pick when you're going to actually be able to scout in a way that you weren't able to scout this year. That second-round pick is going to have a lot of value. Plenty of great players coming round two for Sam Darnold. Why? Because they're so desperate to find a franchise quarterback, and they didn't want to roll the dice on none of the great quarterbacks in 2021 being left when they picked at number 8 overall. And as it turned out, they would have had Mac Jones. They would have had Justin Fields. And I thought that this was like next level David Tepper hedge fund stuff where he, instead of paying the price to move up, which would have been a lot more expensive, you pay the price to get Sam Darnold as your insurance and also as, you know, the fact that he's on the roster keeps someone from jumping over you. And then you can get Justin Fields or Mac Jones. I really thought they were going to take one of those quarterbacks at number 8. So I just, for a team that is desperate for a franchise quarterback, I think that this investment, and hey, I could be wrong. Darnold may end up being the guy that Colin Cowherd thought he was going to be. I don't know if you saw that video making the rounds. Low-end Andrew Luck, high-end Brett Favre. Maybe that's what Sam Darnold will become with the Panthers. But to me, I just think that it's way too much to give up simply because they didn't want to let the board play out and get one of the rookies.
He had the worst passer rating of any quarterback in 2020. Worse than that of Carson Wentz, all right? And I think everybody, you know, knows that Carson Wentz did not pass any sort of eye test last year. Look, Sam Darnold is a history of turnovers, whether it was at USC or with the Jets. I think that you could be right that the Panthers could certainly be in the same position that they are currently in. You know, when they wanted to get Sam Darnold for instead of Teddy Bridgewater, they could be in the same position a year from now and having to draft somebody or sign somebody else in free agency. So I certainly agree with you there. Here's my next one. I think the Ravens trading a left tackle to the top dog in the conference is something that I'm going to shake my head over. And it's something that I literally just praised Brett Beach for. And I understand that. And I think that they did a great job. But look, you even asked Brett about this, man. Like when you're getting a guy who is on a team that's one of your rivals in the conference for the top spot there, and you're competing with to get into the Super Bowl, it's either, well, you know what? We really don't believe in this guy. Or maybe you're doing something that you shouldn't quite do to help the team that's been in the Super Bowl for the last 2 years. So I don't know. It's like, it reminds me of when the Cavs traded Kyrie Irving to the Boston Celtics. You don't trade that guy to the top competitor in the conference. You trade him to the wherever your sport Siberia is. That's where you let him go be a left tackle. And they didn't do that. They sent him to the Chiefs. They got a first round pick for him, but we'll see if it actually works out.
And if all else fails, you put him in John Kuhn's trunk. The next one for me is, that's a joke. If you weren't watching the show earlier, you really aren't going to get that one. It's that one's all in good fun. Orlando
good.
Brown wouldn't fit in John Kuhn's trunk.
Fit.
I'm fairly confident saying that. That's one of those where you have to get a bungee cord, you know, when you got something really big in the trunk and you got to hold it together. Okay, I will find you. I will find you. Okay. I got to go with the Jaguars considering Tim Tebow, even if they don't sign him. And I suspect that they will. The other day, Urban Meyer tells Chris Collinsworth, hey, I told the guys, let's give it a shot, but we haven't signed him yet. But let's give it a shot. I think there's two reasons they haven't signed him yet. And one of them is they got to figure out what they're doing with Gardner Minshew so they know that number 15 will be available to sell all of those Tim Tebow jerseys that people are going to buy right out of the gates. And here's the one time Tim Tebow played tight end in his career. Urban Meyer said he's got great ball skills. I'd hate to see what that play would have looked like if he didn't have great ball skills. And I have a feeling they're going to run it again so we can fully appreciate moving right to left in the shotgun formation. And there's the throw and it's boom right off the helmet. Great ball skills. That would count as a completion in electric football. So maybe he's working at a level that the rest of us aren't. Look, they leak it the same day that Trevor Lawrence is going to become the new face of the franchise. They leak that they worked him out. What is that? What are you doing? Embrace Trevor Lawrence. You don't need to dust off Tim Tebow, a guy that hasn't played in the NFL in 9 years. It's a gimmick. It's an effort to sell jerseys. It's an effort to sell tickets. And hey, Miles, I'm a firm believer. If he's on the 90-man roster, you're going to see him in a uniform. Now, it may be, I mean, in September. It may be practice squad, and he gets elevated because there's two guys a week who can move up to the active roster. We're going to see him in uniform. And here's the other side of it, too, and I thought of this during the break. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, first-round pick in 2014, was out of football last year because he had a guaranteed salary from the Bears, and he just didn't play for anyone. He's participating in the Texans rookie minicamp this weekend on a tryout basis. Why not have Tim Tebow participate in the Jaguars rookie minicamp on a tryout basis? Let's see what he can do against the rookies before you sign him. It just, it tells me it's preordained, it's predetermined, it's a gimmick. Anyway, go ahead. You're up.
Well, I didn't like that either, and that was on my list. And there's the other thing that I could have said right here, which is that NFL allowing single-digit numbers for, like, you know, defensive backs. And but I won't say that. I won't. I'm going to go with Cincinnati passing on Penei Sewell and drafting Ja'Marr Chase. And I think that, you know what, Ja'Marr Chase could be an excellent receiver. He and Joe Burrow could continue that excellent chemistry that they had at LSU. But when you've basically been spinning your wheels and trying to replace Andrew Whitworth since 2016 when he left and then went to the Los Angeles Rams for the 2017 season, you don't have that guy that's entrenched as a left tackle. Somebody like Penei Sewell, you pair him with Joe Burrow, you have your quarterback and your left tackle maybe for 10 years. And I mean, look, Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow could be the next Montana to Rice or Young to Rice, whichever one you want to use. But I just feel like when you have a chance to get a left tackle, that's something that you really probably should do, especially when your quarterback is coming off a devastating knee injury.
The last one for me, and there's a bunch of different ways I could go here. The Lions trading for Jared Goff. I don't really think that was a good idea, even though they picked up probably a first-round pick to do it. The Rams using the first-round tender on Darius Williams. We've talked about that before. Yeah. Even the Steelers bringing back Ben Roethlisberger. I think both sides are going to regret that come December. But I'll just say everything the Texans have done in the offseason. It was overshadowed once Deshaun Watson's legal issues arose. But everything they've done, and it all traces back to Jack Easterby, frankly. Comedic stylings of Jack Easterby. Just go to YouTube and you can entertain yourself for about 45 minutes with all sorts of different jokes or attempt thereat. But everything they've done, Miles, everything they've done, with the exception maybe of signing Tyrod Taylor, everything they've done is a dumb move.
Oh, it's all been very, very head-scratching. And I would guess that Davis Mills also falls under the consideration of not too dumb either. But most of, other than that, yes.
All right, let's take a break. We'll wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live right after this. Miles, one of the things we talked about yesterday, the 7-game stretch for the Ravens at the end of the season, which features two games against your Browns, and the Browns is the Browns no more, frankly, and the Steelers, they play twice, and they play the Packers and the Rams. The only break comes against the Bengals in that 7-game stretch. Calais Campbell said, that's heavyweight battle time. That's the championship round right there. We're going to find out what we're made of real quick. That's going to be a grind toward the end. Yes, it is. That means rack up the wins. Rack up the wins when you can, Miles.
No doubt. And there is that weird schedule quirk where the Browns are playing the Ravens basically two games in a row because of that bye. I'm interested to see how that works out for them because they have time to figure things out and figure out what worked and what didn't.
And the Ravens have the Steelers while the Browns are off. Meanwhile, in Maryland this weekend, the Preakness Stakes, 146th running. Enjoy that. We'll see you on Monday.
With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Memorial Day savings for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.